extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr. Got a drink out. It's late night, Wednesday night. There's a little disappointment. The U.S. didn't put a bow on their World Cup berth, but who cares about bows when you got a World Cup to go to? The U.S. are going to Qatar 2022. It might be third place in CONCACAF, but that will not matter come November and December, guys. We're going to the World Cup. There's no more, what are we doing? What are you doing? Why are we crying? Why are we at the bar at 2 a.m. on whatever night that was after losing in Cuba? Those memories, they're not wiped. And I was feeling a little bummed after Costa Rica took it to us a little bit with a 2-0 win in San Jose to keep their dominance, let's say, at home. Now 11 wins, 2 draws, but forget all that. Try to, at least, for the time being. Doyle, Kalen, we are going to the World Cup. Canada is going to the World Cup. Mexico is also going to the World Cup. Costa Rica is going to Qatar and probably going to the World Cup. They got New Zealand next, and they took 19 of 21 points to get there. 25 points. It took a draw at the Azteca to make sure that we did not go into a playoff. Let's start positive and hopefully stay positive, Doyle. How are you feeling, man? We're going to the World Cup. Again, we're going to the World Cup.
Relieved. I'm happy for this team. I'm impressed with the way they played in the first two games of this window, because, I mean, what they did in the first two games made this game, you're just trying to avoid a 6-0 loss. And they did. And that's fine, and that's how you get to the World Cup. What I said on the watch-along still holds. Like, I remember watching the U.S. get out of the group stage in 2014 with a loss to Germany. And I remember watching them get out of the group stage in 2002 with a loss to Poland and somehow this improbable South Korean win over Portugal. And, like, we backed into it. And in both, I didn't care. You know, like, it ruled to advance like that. And this is the same feeling. It rules. Like, going back to the World Cup, the nightmare, it's not, like you said, those memories will never be wiped. And believe me, I've tried. But, like, it's.
We tried that night.
But, like, it is now a cycle in the past, and this cycle is the one in which the U.S. playing the youngest team in the entire world, battling through injuries and COVID and everything else, qualified for the World Cup. And it feels great, and I can't wait to watch these guys in November in Qatar.
Friday, Kalen, you will be on the live stream of the World Cup draw in Qatar, with Doyle, with DeMarcus Beasley, with Susanna Collins. The U.S. will be in Pot B, for the first time since 2010. Canada, who we celebrated on the last show, who got to have their party, who knew they were going to the World Cup a day early and knew probably even before that, will be in Pot D, Pot 4. They did not win against Panama in Panama. They needed that. Had they won that match, they would be in Pot C, Pot 3. They would have a slightly better draw as it stands. Nobody wants Canada. They don't want to see that ball pop up. That will be the group of death, almost certainly. On the U.S. side, though, how does this compare to 4 years ago? And how do you sort of...
This is better, Wiebe. This is better.
It's slightly better. Yeah, I'm teeing him up early with an obvious one. We've been live for like 2.5 hours at this point. So I'm putting it on a tee for him. He can hit it as far as he wants to. And does it matter that they lost their final game? Do you care at all that they went to Costa Rica and looked dead on their legs and just couldn't get the job done? Is that a bummer for you? Does it dampen the moment at all? I'm watching right now coverage for Paramount Plus and CBS, and DeAndre Yedlin is wearing goggles during an interview, and you know, Timothy Weah has him on the side of his head, and obviously champagne is flowing, as it should be, in that locker room in San Jose, a place where there has mostly been misery, only misery, in previous points. Yeah, show me your heart, man.
No, like the losing... Well, just to, like, I think what you're asking is a good question as far as, like, to put it within the broader context, because what happened was we watched the match and we were disappointed. We felt like it wasn't what we wanted. It wasn't that moment of realization. And I think when you've gone through a tough time, like in the past, and you've dealt with pain, you want to kind of put an exclamation point on it at the end, because we've kind of had to wait with a little bit of bated breath. But the fact that we've had to wait with bated breath and not like extreme hyperventilation and not sleeping at night over these last few days is a testament to the fact that Greg Berhalter has managed this window extremely well. And I think going to the Azteca, taking a risk and putting that first team out there and getting a point, and even that was like, you felt like there was more in there for us. And then the response coming back to Orlando was tremendous, just putting the game away in the first half. And so, yeah, the like unbeaten, you know, not winning in Costa Rica thing will continue, but I'm very content. I'm good with that streak. No problem. What I would have loved to see the win, don't get me wrong, but I guarantee you when I like log into our watch along stream or whatever it is for that first World Cup morning or whenever it is, I'm not going to be thinking about Costa Rica. I promise you that. And when I just looked up at the screen, I was watching on CBS and I saw Gio Reyna there, and seeing him with the qualified shirt and the champagne goggles on and thinking
he's 18.
About what
he's 18. He should have more than champagne goggles. Come on now.
The whole squad we're going to give an exemption to. I don't know what the drinking age, the legal drinking
age
look,
hey,
is
you
in Costa Rica.
I think
anyways.
Costa Rica, they're good to go.
He plays in Germany, so actually he's fine as long as he doesn't touch down in
no questions, don't ask, don't like, just whatever, man, have fun.
Exactly. So I mean, it's you know, to be able to see, we felt this way with Canada the other day, and like we're able to kind of celebrate and take a moment to think of like the wealth of talent that was going to get to play on the world stage. And for them, it had been, you know, not just 4 years or 8 years absence. It's been 35, but for the U.S., these 4 years have felt like 35, and I think that's because the expectations are rightly placed high for what the U.S. has been able to accomplish. The project that we're all sort of invested in, from Major League Soccer to the grassroots all the way up to the national team. And so to see these guys get their chance on the world's biggest stage, like, I can't wait to see Gio there. I can't wait to see Weston there. I can't wait to see Christian there. I mean, think back to like his emotion in Cuba and just that, like, you know, the tragedy of it all and just the sadness and sorrow that we all felt, but he felt as like a 19 or 20 year old, and has now just like continued forward and had, you know, won the Champions League, done so many things. But like doing it for your country is different, and playing on the World Cup is different. Anybody from Messi to whoever it is, it's another thing. And so I think like to get our chance, or for this group and this generation who have had to learn on the fly to be able to be there, and they've earned it. They've deserved every single bit of it. So, yeah, I think it is a moment to celebrate.
It absolutely is. And I'm sitting here listening to you guys and thinking about what's to come. And I'm not going to lie, you said it. We got into like that. We got, you know, we saw the dark side a little bit during that Costa Rica game, where it was hard to focus on the positive. And I remember qualifications past, and I was at some of those. And I in particular remember qualifying for 2014 and beating Mexico and Columbus and seeing those players and feeling that vibe, but also feeling the 90 minutes of sort of celebration, and not just celebration, but beating your biggest rival to celebrate and to seal your place in Brazil, and to have this culmination and to do it where all the vibes were just positive, positive, positive. Everything was good. Life was great. We're going to the World Cup. We feel like we're on top of the freaking world. We don't necessarily have that feeling in this moment tonight just because of the result. And Christian said it when he came out. He said, everybody wants to turn. Everybody wants to win. Sorry, I'm trying to read a Matt Turner tweet at the same time as I'm doing this. But what I'm thinking about right now is that this isn't just about 2022. It is also very much about 2026. And this group of very young players, as you said, Doyle, this group of players that I don't personally believe we've seen the best from, either individually or collectively, remember what this cycle went through. This was a COVID cycle. This was a stop-start. This was Greg Berhalter not having all his guys together because injuries, and I know that happens all the time, but injuries disrupted his ability to sort of build that set core and give them chemistry together and then go from there. We never really got that moment. Even now, we're talking about a team that qualified without Weston, without Serginho, with Gio Reyna coming back from a long-term injury, without Matt Turner and available,
and starting goalkeeper of those issues. Matt Turner.
Correct. Yes. We saw some of those issues on display tonight. Like, it's easy for people and for us and for anyone who loves this team or is absolutely, you know, freaking crazy on Twitter or the internet and all these, like, USMNT dark holes that people find themselves in. And I hope that's not who they are in their regular life, what they express there, but it might be. It's easy to forget that, like, there's a lot of time between now and Qatar. This is a young team. This is an incomplete team. This is a team that will change. This is a team that will play two Nations League games, that will have tune-ups, who, as we've seen over the last 6 months, 6 months in the club game is like an eternity as well. There will be moves this summer. There will be changes at their clubs. There will be performances. There will be momentum. There will be accomplishments. There will be injuries. There will be any number of things to the U.S. and every other team, all 32 that are going to Qatar. But this team now can look at the next two World Cups and know that they are going to be there. This young team with massive potential that hasn't yet scratched the surface of what they can accomplish and yet still have made a World Cup can build toward an incredible opportunity to prove themselves in this stage of their career, and then look ahead once that's done to building toward 2026 and doing it here in the United States, where we know what it means to host, not just from a celebration fan perspective, but from a team perspective. It is your best opportunity to make noise, to do something special, to accomplish what we all hope the U.S. could one day accomplish. And that's getting way ahead of ourselves. We have a lot to do before then, but that's what's starting to, like, juice me up right now, is it's not just 2022. It's the next 4 years. And what can U.S. soccer, what Canadian soccer, what can MLS, what can all those things be in conjunction as they build toward one goal? And it took a little bit of a roller coaster there at the end. It took a draw at Azteca. It took some results going the U.S.'s way. It took Costa Rica picking up 19 of 21 points over their last seven games to put pressure on, to accomplish a dream themselves that's still just, you know, not necessarily hanging on the balance, but it's 90 minutes away. They're not in Qatar yet. They're just going there for a playoff. Like, they did it, and they had to do it. They did it, and they had to do it, and that's what matters. These young guys did it.
Yeah, and I think the process of that itself is super valuable, because when you think of hosting the World Cup, you're not going to go through that same process, right? And so I think the fact that this group was able to, I was concerned at a certain point of, like, you know, it took a while to choose a manager after the last cycle. It took a while to, like, select the team. You're implementing a system. You got players during COVID, as you mentioned. You're trying to, like, learn via iPads, and I was like,
I forgot about that.
And I was like, is there enough time? Honestly, like, is there enough time for this group, for the A team to, like, we didn't even see them for a while to see if, like, they were going to have enough time to build. And at every step, I would say the team, when I thought they would have to kind of, like, go through maybe a more difficult process, seemed to kind of step up to the challenge. And I think that really speaks well to, like, the character of the team. And I would say also to Berhalter for pulling the right strings. Because they had, like, you know, even when you go to, like, the Nations League, right? And it was like Christian, but he's not really fit. And he's coming off the Champions League, and then he gets the winner. And then it's like, oh, it's our B team against, like, in the Gold Cup. And they go ahead and overperform. And then you see Miles Robinson come in, and then you saw the emergence of Walker, and, like, at each step I think guys have, like, really sort of found that foundation and kind of built it from within, and, like, have learned on the fly. So this process of, like, qualification, I think, has been really important, as you're mentioning that longer picture of, like, of course, qualifying and getting to Qatar. And, like, I think in part of it, the, like, anti-climax of this last day in some ways was a sign of progress too, that it was like, we didn't have to, like, have this climactic, like, all in or all out moment, which is really good. And, you know, you could say the same thing about Canada because they, you know, had this thing locked up already. Although I think they've left something on the table that will be difficult as well, as far as what pot they fall into. But still, like, I think this group has learned a ton. And as you project to 2026, I don't think you can, like, forget the maturation process that I think you might reflect back then on this process now, as far as them coming together at a young age under difficult circumstances without any real, like, example to do that.
We qualified. That was a job. And whether it's pretty or it's ugly, the end result is the same. Whether you lose the last game or beat the brakes off Costa Rica and San Jose and make history, doesn't change where you're going. Doesn't change where you were in the pot. They were going to be in pot two no matter what, given all the other results. We're going to the World Cup.
I will also say, I think that if something had been on the line in this game other than pride, you would have seen a different mentality from this U.S. team. And we saw that repeatedly. Like, the last time they looked kind of at sea was the Jamaica game away back in November, right? They got beat up in Canada in January, but the U.S. actually didn't play badly in that game. If you go back and you watch, they obviously were not sharp in the final third, and Canada was. Canada was super opportunistic, but the U.S. were up for that game. They just got beat. They beat the hell out of Honduras. They were much better than El Salvador. Should have won by more than 1-0. They were better than Mexico the other day. Should have won that game. Obviously, they were much better than Panama. I think that's the real U.S. team. And I think that, you know, to sort of riff off of what you were saying, Weeby, like, there was nothing really at stake here. The U.S. are going to be in pot two, win or lose or draw. They were going to qualify for the World Cup, win, lose by less than 5-0 or 6-0 or draw, and qualified for the World Cup. Like, so they, you know, and I said to you on the watch along, I said, like, this doesn't feel like a qualifier. I think it was about half hour, maybe 40 minutes in. I was like, it feels like more than a friendly. It feels like a lot less than a qualifier. And it's totally understandable. And I think maybe if these guys were, you know, all 27, 28, 29 instead of 19, 21, 22 or 23, I guess, in Pulisic's case, maybe if that was the age range, they would have had the know-how and the maturity to amp it up to hit that level of intensity that they needed to hit, and to get it done. But they didn't, and it doesn't really matter. To go back to the bigger point, I trust that the team that we saw the last five games is the real version of this team. And I do think that barring some sort of internal catastrophe, you know, like 1998 style, that's the team I'm expecting to see on the field in Qatar. And it's a good feeling. It's a really good feeling because I think guys like Tyler Adams and Walker Zimmerman and Weston McKennie, when he gets back, you know, Gio Reyna, who's a killer, and Sergiño Dest, who's come miles under Xavi. I'm not there on Brendan Aaronson yet.
It's another guy. It's another guy we didn't have level. Available.
Yeah, well, right, and Tim Weah too, right? So, like, that core of guys, like, I've got a lot of trust in them, and I wasn't there 3 months ago, and it's nice to be there. It's nice to look at the national team that way, and for what it's worth, even with the disappointment for Canada tonight, who did need a win to move up a pot and did have something on the line and kind of fell on their face and had, you know, maybe their worst performance of the Ocho, I kind of have that faith in them too. Like, and they've shown it throughout qualifying just how mentally tough and mentally strong they are. And yeah, they had a letdown tonight, but that does, like, I trust the larger sample size there.
It is difficult too, I think, for both, like, to go through the process of qualifying for the first time in 35 years and then, you know, feel that high and then have to get back up for this match is difficult. And I think for whatever you say, like knowing you're going to a match that as long as you don't lose 6-0 is not the easiest way to approach, not to make excuses, but also to give credit to Costa Rica. I thought Keylor Navas made some big saves in the first half as well, to like any time that we did pressure and look like several good opportunities, especially on set pieces. I think Miles Robinson had one, maybe two.
Two.
A couple guys had good looks. He makes those big saves, obviously had to come out in the second half, but that's what, you know, has put Costa Rica in this position. Where they're just, and the same thing is like, it's not like we've been running over them in Costa Rica before, which made me even more thankful for the position that we'd put ourselves heading into this match.
I think this is, when I think about some of the discourse that goes around CONCACAF and the U.S. national team, it just, to me, just keeps going back to, I wonder how much historical context people have, and I wonder how much people actually know and understand and respect some of the teams in our region. And it's easy for you to be like, oh yeah, Panama, El Salvador, Costa Rica, like, especially when you're a, let's be straight, Euro snob.
Euro snobs aren't listening to Extra Time, though. That's the issue.
No, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. They might be. And what's up if you are? We do appreciate. Thanks for listening. I really, you know, it's wonderful. It's great to have you here. No doubt about it. But like, yeah, like this is a game that is disappointing. But the U.S. could, if it's not Keylor Navas, the U.S. is probably up 2-0 in the first half, or 1-0. Or different game state, or what have you. A little concerning on set pieces where both these goals came from, but not unfixable. I have some tweets here. David Wright says, some credit to Greg in the U.S. We entered this most difficult window, and it was. This was our most difficult three games. You go to Azteca, and you go to Costa Rica, two houses of horrors for the U.S. on both sides, and you have a must-win game against Panama, who had been flying coming in. We entered this most difficult window where the fate's on the line and missing McKinney, Destin, Aronson, and Turner, who he doesn't mention, but we'll keep mentioning next. We'll talk about that a lot in a second. And they got it done, so we didn't have to sweat tonight very much. We didn't have to sweat tonight. Austin Bradley, just how young these guys are and how they got themselves into a World Cup without anybody on the squad who has already been before. Impressive doesn't even capture it. It's a young team. This is their first massive accomplishment. You can point at Nations League. That's one game. You can point at Gold Cup. That's a different group than will go to the World Cup. This was it. And I just think we have to keep repeating that this wasn't like, think how your life changed. Anybody listen to this, think about how your life has changed, has been different, has been turned upside down over the last 2 years. I mean, I feel like I've been through a blender. I don't know what the hell happened. Like, my wife and I were sitting around talking, we're like looking at pictures during the pandemic, and we're like, holy, like, that happened? I don't remember that. And now imagine traveling the world, having your job stop and start and be revolve around your ability to physically do something at a world-class level, and now you got to go into Central America and the Caribbean and do something you've never done before with pretty much nobody in the squad that's ever done it either. Now, nobody in the squad that's ever done it either. I mean, what, Tim Ream, I guess, was around, but I don't think, had he done it? No, he hadn't done it. Think about accomplishing that and having the freaking chorus scream about a 2-0 loss at Costa Rica that nobody in history will remember. Other than sour pusses.
I think the guys like, are I, spray I'm not the too champagne. Worried about the guys celebrating. Like, I saw all the guys even in the post.
Yeah, they seem to be good. They seem to be good to go.
And you saw Greg even reflecting on, for him as a manager, to be like, you know, I think Jenny Chu asked him around like going as a player and then going as a manager, had he reflected on that? And he was like, I hadn't had time to think about it yet, you know. And it's like, I think for the group overall, the good thing is that I think this was the expectation. So it's more of a, I think the positive, it's like, it is more of a relief than like this overawed, like, than celebration.
This massive release. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's important. That's an important distinction and might sort of fairly color the, like, the feeling of tonight. I think the lesson was more the last time not to take anything for granted and to not, like, wait or that, like, it's not guaranteed, right? But the idea of now that, like, this group is going to be able to kind of, like, take this on, like, I have a ton of faith in the, I feel like they've proved a lot as far as the personality of this team. And like all these guys, like if you look across them, like, you know, I mentioned Christian, but it's just like the rest of them have found major success at the club level already at this age. But now to go and do it at the World Cup stage is like, you know, and to do it together is awesome.
Well, that's the caveat, right? Is that, well done, you're there, but you will still be judged. Like, we might not remember Costa Rica, but if you fall flat at the World Cup, we will remember that. You will remember that. And that's the bargain, right? Like, you get there, and then all the chips are down. Matt Pollard asks, are the ghosts of Cuba laid to rest, or will we as a soccer nation still feel effects or pain of missing out on 2018?
We should always feel that pain. But that's part of being a soccer nation, right? We care. That wrecked me, and it wrecked a lot of people. It sent a lot of people who were relatively happy fans into this state of perma rage that, like, it's still happening. All you have to do is look on Twitter right now. It's a bloodbath. But we, like, it that loss, if you're a fan, will stay with you forever. I still have nightmares about the 1998 World Cup finishing dead last, because we, coming off of 94, we were on such a high, and we had, you know, a lot of success in qualifying, and it felt like this team was going to take a step forward. They took a step backwards. Like, that stuff sticks with you if you're a fan. But also, if you're a fan, you could always look forward to what's coming next. And this is what came next. A young generation of players, again, the youngest national team in the world, just qualified for the World Cup. And they're going to play in the World Cup in Qatar. Doesn't bury what happened in the past, but it makes it more fun, I think, for everyone to look at the future.
We knocked down the wreckage, and we're rebuilding on top of it. Yeah, the foundation will always be a little haunted. You might not want to go in the basement. Hey, don't go down there. Bad memories down there. But hopefully we'll have a little bit of a, I don't know, hopefully we'll have something cathartic, a release in Qatar that we were hoping for tonight. And, you know, tonight would have always been the preamble. Greg Berhalter has, what is it, March 30th? I can't, my brain's too fried to do any sort of, like, calendar math right now. But if you go to November, which is 11, we're in the 7 months. 7 months to figure things out. But the other thing is not all on Greg. Like, it's on these players to go back to their clubs and stay in the sort of form that will allow them to perform in November. It's on these players to, you know, choose the right moves in the summer should those opportunities come. It's on fate and on luck that the best players in our team and the ones we lean on the most are the ones we need in certain moments, et cetera, either don't get hurt, knock on wood, win competition battles, you know, have opportunities that we don't expect them to have X number of months ago. I mean, who would have thought Matt Turner would be at Arsenal? Literally nobody. Not one person. Okay, but would you have said Arsenal, Doyle?
I wouldn't have said Arsenal. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Doyle's like, yes, I would have said Arsenal.
I would have said Man United, because they have a history of buying goalkeepers from the United States, and they also have a type, right? De Gea is not exactly great with his feet. Turner's more of a De Gea type than he is a...
Speaking of, it's nice to see him on his feet.
Yes.
Here recently. Someone on an exercise bike. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of this game, and there's a lot to talk about from the game and some concerns that certainly trickle down and apply to Qatar and the build-up to Qatar, you have to give huge props to Costa Rica. You know, Canada's celebrating, U.S. is celebrating, Mexico's celebrating. They're there. We've called this their worst team in, you know, more than a decade, and they finished with 28 points, tied with Canada, but behind on goal differential. U.S. on 25, Costa Rica on 25. After 7 matches in this octagonal, the U.S. had 14 points. Mexico also had 14 points. Costa Rica had 6 points. Costa Rica got 19 of 21 points from their final 7 matches. They won every single match except for a draw at Azteca. They beat Honduras, Panama, Jamaica, Canada, El Salvador, and the U.S. They beat every other team in the Hex other than Mexico.
That's wild.
that is with their backs against a wall.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the all-time runs, right? Like, and this is, I think that, like, this is the last final qualifying round that is going to feel this tight and this anxiety ridden.
Will it?
Given the expansion.
For the top teams, it will.
For the top teams. And Costa Rica is one of the top teams.
True.
Right? And so what we're going to remember this one for, if we were neutrals, if, you know, as fans of the sport, we should remember this for is one, Canada's coming of age moment, Canada's coming out party with the way they played and the players that they have, and even doing a lot of it down the stretch without Alphonso Davies. And two, this just miracle run from Costa Rica, who are in between generations. Costa Rica's where the U.S. were 4 years ago, where so many of this great prior generation had seemingly aged out. It didn't have anything left and couldn't quite drag them over the hump. And the difference is between Costa Rica and the U.S. is Costa Rica has Keylor Navas. Keylor Navas is, I mean, he might be the greatest player in the history of this federation. Like,
if you switch goalkeepers in this game, it's a 2-0.
It's 2-0 the other way. US it's 2-0 the other way.
Straight up.
He's just spectacular, and the work he put in, and then having the guys in front of him be like, it's just a Costa Rican soccer trait to be that hard and resilient and tough, and like, it doesn't matter how badly you're out playing them, you're never actually kicking their ass. The veterans that were held over still had that, and the kids that were brought into the squad over the final 8 games or so, they seem to have that too. And it's spectacular. And good luck, New Zealand, men. New Zealand's going to have to bring their A++ game to get past this Costa Rican team in June in the playoff.
No yellow cards for the guys that couldn't get yellow cards and play in that match. Big time rotation from Luis Fernando Suarez here. So a couple of those guys. I mean, Celso Borja's not even in the. I don't think he was even in the squad. Like Calvo, not in the squad. Like, they really made sure that they were not going to put anything out there that was going to handicap them going forward, and it won't. And they maintain hegemony over the U.S. and San Jose. That doesn't mean nothing. You know, we talked about we wanted to make history. We wanted to go to Azteca, and I'm sitting here thinking I want to hold that over Mexican fans until the end of time. And we didn't get it. You think Costa Rica wanted to let the U.S. come in and what they know to be also one of the last truly, well, at least like, you know, traditional as it pertains to how it's been done, CONCACAF qualifying cycles? You think they wanted to lose theirs? Hell no. And they didn't. 2-0 winners. Let's dig in here. But before, by the way, Anders, I keep reading the chat. Anders is, I can't tell where he's at on this. Lost to a Costa Rica B team, SMH. All right, Anders, 19 points, or excuse me, Costa Rica, 19 points in the last 7. Mexico, 14 points after the in their last 7 qualifiers. U.S., 11 points in their last 7 qualifiers. 3 wins and 2 draws. 2 losses to Costa Rica and Canada over that time. The draw at Mexico. Let's talk about goalkeeper. Zach Steffen did some flapping in this game. He had a set piece, and it didn't go through him, but it went by him. He went out and tried to get a ball, didn't get that ball. Costa Rica scored. You've made some references to Matt Turner, Doyle, and we know where you stand. Where is your mind at right now when it pertains to the goalkeeping competition, or perhaps even still lack thereof, in the U.S. men's national team?
Yeah, one of Berhalter's strengths as a coach has been his willingness to drop players who aren't performing. And some argue that he's held on a little bit too long with certain players. But whether it comes to a Sebastian Legette or a John Brooks or Josh Sargent, if you are getting chances and you're not performing, eventually you see the bench. Or in, you know, their case, you're out of the team entirely. It's tough. It's hard. I feel for those players because it's, I'm sure for all of them, it's their dream to go to the World Cup. But that's life as a professional athlete, and that's what you have to do if you're going to be a good coach. The one guy who does not seem to factor into this type of thinking is Zach Steffen. He's not been good in qualifying. He was good against Mexico the other night, I should say. He was not good against Panama. He was borderline disastrous tonight. He's had other really, really tough games in qualifying. The first game against Costa Rica, that goal he gave up to Fuller was not great. The goal he gave up to Mikhail Antonio, like, that is a hell of a hit. But, you know, he should have done better on that. You know, Tony Meola is out there on SiriusXM saying, like, yeah, if you're a goalkeeper and you look back at the tape, you're going to be critical of yourself and your footwork, and you're going to want to have done better at that. And, like, these are goals that you're giving up in qualifying, man. Those are goals that cost the U.S. points. And it happened repeatedly. And then he's going to go back to Manchester City, and he's not going to play. He's not going to get a chance to play through it. And to come out of, whether it's a slump or just his form, we won't even know. I am worried that Zach Steffen seems undroppable. I'm not going to say equally worried, but I'm also worried that Matt Turner, who by the numbers and by the performances is clear number one, that he is going to a club where he's not going to be playing much either come August. It is my biggest, like, there are two other pretty big concerns, one being starting number nine and then the other being backup left back. The goalkeeping situation is my biggest concern, because right now our goalkeeping situation, it's losing us points. It's not good.
I was just about to be like, what about the number nine, Doyle? Like, you even go to the number nine yet?
We'll get there. Don't worry about that.
Think, like, it is a little bit of like, when you're looking at the situation, be like, okay, tell me that we're going to have a goalkeeper at Man City and Arsenal, and we're going to have some concerns. And I think I would be like, I'll take those types of problems. And, you know, I think those are things that, like, ultimately, you know, are good in some ways, but I totally agree with Doyle in the sense that, like, the fact that we don't have a goalkeeper that is going to be playing regular minutes guaranteed leading towards, not even guaranteed, but, like, realistically, leading towards Qatar. And, like, yes, those pictures can also change. You could see potentially a loan move or somebody getting moved, over the summer in anticipation of this. And to try to solve that, which I think would behoove both of them in a way, because you do things knowing that there is a World Cup waiting. The tricky part is for Turner's situation is, like, his form in MLS was top notch, right? And ended up breaking it, like, forcing his way into the team, but didn't seem enough to supplant Turner, regardless of how well Steffen. He played almost. Yeah, sorry, Steffen. Regardless of how well he played. And then obviously, you know, he did so well that you end up getting a dream move to a club like Arsenal. You're not going to say no to that. But it doesn't actually change the picture or the dynamic for him, because he's still going to be behind Steffen. He doesn't have the argument now of saying, oh, I'm playing week in, week out. I'm in top form. I'm going to find my way into the team. So it does make it a little bit difficult. I think it's pretty clear to me that Steffen is going to be the choice at this point. I think there's a number of reasons behind that. And one, I think there is a familiarity with Greg that is just a realistic part of just a manager and working with a player. Two, I think his ability with his feet and the way that Greg wants to play, I think, gives him a much bigger upside as far as how Greg has his game model and the way he wants to kind of build from the back and be able to use his goalkeeper. But yeah, I think it's totally fair to be critical of Zach within this window. I mean, even I thought he was fantastic, because I came out and defended him after this last match and said, well, 0-0 clean sheet at the Azteca, really strong performance, made good saves. And then you win 5-1 at home in a must-win situation against Panama. And yeah, were there a couple plays where there was a miscommunication between him and Walker on one where Walker thinks he's leaving it and Zach is, you know, rightly expects, I think, Walker to clear it. He drops a ball that doesn't get punished. Today he did. So I do think this competition is a good thing. I just don't know how the picture changes for Turner, more specifically, where I just don't see how, unless, you know, he somehow wins his way into the team, which as of right now, you know, unforeseen, you never know what's going to happen, but it doesn't seem set up for that way for him. So I think it's just going to be an uphill battle for him to break his way into Stefan's place.
I think injuries are obviously playing a role now, and I think will further down the line. I mean, Zach's had problems with his back, and it doesn't feel like those back injuries just sort of poof go away. And he's had issues where he hasn't been able to play for the U.S. because of that. Turner right now is just now getting on a bike. And that's one of the things that's a real bummer is, like, you would like, and maybe he still will. Maybe, you know, maybe he'll get back into that Revs team before the summer and show us the form that he had shown for basically the last 4 years running both club and country. But he had an ill-timed hiccup here with his health. I don't know how it happened. Nobody really seems to know how it happened. It seems to be sort of the subject of a lot of innuendo and rumors and conspiracy theories and, you know, whatever it might be, from the cold or from an ankle injury that had been a foot injury that had been hampering him since preseason or what have you. I don't know what it is. I know that he was able to play in the freezing, you know, in the brick cold in Minnesota, and then he hasn't been able to play since then. But that sort of stunted his momentum, and he had so much of it. And you don't know, like, when does he come back? What form does he come back in? Who are the Revs at that time? How does he then transition into Arsenal? What does that mean for his ability to compete for that starting job? Where is he at health-wise when he comes in? If he's not sort of at peak confidence, does he have a chance to, however long that shot is, to win the starting job? But then what happens if Zach Steffen gets hurt? And he's gotten hurt. That's on the table. Anybody can get hurt. Like, you know, Ethan Horvath could be walking down the street next week and fall off a curb. I don't know why I said that. Knock on wood.
Does don't Ethan Horvath? Evil on Ethan.
I don't know what the hell I was thinking. Does Ethan Horvath have a chance? He's playing.
He should, because he's playing.
Does Gago Slonina have it? I mean, probably not, but I know. I'm just throwing it out there. I just had to say his name, Doyle.
I love extra time.
Look, man, go back to Horvath. If neither Steffen nor Turner are playing,
it's got to be one of those two.
It's probably going to be one of those two. It seems likely it's going to be Zach Steffen no matter what. That has me nervous as hell. Tonight is, you know, exhibit number one. Why? He's not a reliable goalkeeper, man. Like, I understand in theory he does a lot of things well. In practice, it doesn't come off. And he's not going to get enough reps between now and then to work through it.
Well, that's the difficult thing, too, is like... You don't have a base of evidence to say, okay, well, that was a blip. And that's not, I don't know that that's necessarily Zach Steffen's fault. Like, I can't sit here and fault him for, and we've talked to him on the show, if like going to, and he said, like, maybe I'll have to, that's something I'll have to consider. I don't fault him for going to Man City and making a ton of money and playing with the best players in the world and stacking trophies and being in competition for literally everything that they play for, despite the fact that he's not the starting goalkeeper. I don't fault him for that. Same way I don't fault Steffen, or excuse me, I got a case of the Kalins here, fault Turner for going to Arsenal. But the truth is it doesn't put the U.S. men's national team in the best possible position going into Qatar. We're not in a bad position. You said it, Kalen. Like, if we're like, oh, man, we got a goalkeeper at Man City and Arsenal, and then, like, they're number two, they very well could play. Like, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't share the same kind of, like, nervousness around Steffen personally. I think he does give some qualities that are going to really, like, listen, if I could have him play for a club where he played every week, I think the idea of like being the backup at Man City is great, and you're getting experience and being around and exposure to all this. That's phenomenal. But ultimately, I think you need to be playing regularly if you're going to lead towards the World Cup. But I don't share the same sort of like this makes me nervous feeling. And even I think a part of that is because Matt Turner exists too. And Ethan Horvath also exists, and Sean Johnson. Like, that's not a position that I'm like overly worried about. Like, if we want to move on to the nine,
let's do it.
That's a position where I start to feel a little more of like, okay, what, like, who are we converting to a nine? Who can step up? Who's going to grab it? Like, I'm more concerned about positions like that, I think, than the goalkeeper position, which I think is a fun and fair debate, but ultimately, I think that's going to get settled by like who's playing and who's in form at the moment.
Clint Dempsey put out his World Cup 11, and he had Timothy Weah at his nine. Who are the options at nine? I mean, you have Pepe, who started this game against Costa Rica, had one opportunity saved. You have Jesus Ferreira. You have, I mean, I guess you have Jesse Zardes, technically, maybe. I don't know. Something crazier things have happened.
My money is on mystery box striker.
You have Jozy Altidore. Welcome to the mystery box. You have Jozy Altidore.
Somebody's going to get hot. Either.
So this, by the way, is why I'm concerned, right? What we were just talking about, like, do we go with the Man City player? Matt just chose the mystery box.
It could be a boat.
What?
There'll be people that understand that joke.
Will there?
Yeah, there will be. I promise you there will be. Okay, please CC Doyle and Kalen on Twitter when you get that joke.
Okay, wait, Anders is getting it. Anders,
people,
is
believe me, people will get that joke. I won't say anything else. You just continue on your discussion. What is the so the mystery box is Herc and Buttle.
Right, exactly. For those of you who don't remember, in 2010,
Robbie Finley as well.
Well, that was a different kind of situation, but like Hercules Gomez and Edson Buttle both got hot that year, and they played their way into Bob Bradley's plans, and neither of them had been really on the radar at all. But in the 6 months heading up to the World Cup, they got hot, they scored goals, and they made the World Cup. It could be Jesus Ferreira. He's not really a mystery box striker, right? He's kind of a known quantity now for Berhalter. I was surprised he didn't start this game.
Same.
It could be Ricardo Pepi. Maybe, you know, Freiburg go down and he's now banging him in the two Bundesliga. I would be fine with that. Maybe Josh Sargent. You know, maybe Norwich go down, Timo Pukki get sold on, though that seems unlikely, and Sargent starts playing as a number nine and suddenly is good again. Maybe it's someone like Brandon Vazquez or Brian White or whoever in MLS scoring 20 goals. It's an unsettled position. I suspect that Ferreira is going to be one of the choices. I would not... There's nobody else really who I would be willing to put any sort of money on. I will say, I don't think there's a chance in hell that Jordy Pefok's going. I think he had his chance in this window, and he's in great form for his club. He had his chance in this window to show he could translate that to the national team, and he came up short, and he doesn't defend at all, and his movement and buildup is not the type of movement that Berhalter wants. So I think the door is probably closed on Jordy Pefok, but anyone else, I mean, it wouldn't shock me at all.
Who would you want, Kalen? When you see that lineup come out against, I don't know, let me just fire up this World Cup draw machine I've been playing with this whole time. When you see it come out against, let's say, South Korea, our group in this one is Ecuador, South Korea, and Belgium, by the way. Who would you want to see at the nine?
I think somebody that can... You know, I'm just going to talk abstractly, but I think somebody that can, like, on their own make a difference or on their own draw attention or create an opportunity. And, like, for all of the talk around the nine position, like, I think there's a number of guys that can fit the system and do well. And I think Jesus Ferreira is going to be in that mix. And I think he fits the system quite well. The way he's been able to drop off and connect and then, you know, allow other players to get in behind and stretch the pitch. And he's taken some chances as well. But that's the funny thing about this whole number nine position is like, at one point it was like DK, right? It wasn't that long ago. It was like, DK is the guy. And then it was like, well, we got this settled now with Pepe. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, it hasn't. And that's the like the tricky part of this whole thing is it's like, it's such a position that's really about form and is really about like who's hitting at the time that to project even out right now. I mean, I'd love to be able to lock somebody down, but to project it out right now is difficult. And so I might be with Team Mystery Box for Doyle. And like to go to Clint's point on Weah, I actually think it would help. I don't know if he would be up for it because I think he sees himself as a winger and I understand that. But I think it might help. I think it might change his opinion if it's like Gio Reyna's back and Christian's back and then you're looking for a number nine and you're like, do I want to start or do I want to come off the bench? And so I think that does intrigue me as far as trying to, in a sense, take somebody from another position where you're getting your best 11 on the pitch. And I think that Weah is like right in and pushing for that on the wing. But I think it might be a tough argument for him ultimately with the Musa McKinney and Tyler Adams triangle in the middle to then step in and say, I'm going to win a spot over Christian or Gio or Aronson or whoever it might be on the wing. So I think
Areola,
that's compelling.
If you really want to piss off some people out there. Sorry.
Exactly.
All right. What would Jesus Ferreira have to do this year for you guys to be like, okay, you know what? He's our starting number nine. 15 and 9.
It's not even about it is about the numbers on the goal scoring side. I don't have any doubt about what Jesus can do, sort of dropping in the build up and, you know, creating space. And I think he's a really good like passer and understands how wingers play off him and the timing, and the weight and the feel for those passes and those runs. It's just getting in goal dangerous positions regularly within that system that he's playing with under Nico Estevez in Dallas and scoring goals. Like, he is in literally the perfect situation to prepare for this moment. He could not be in a better position, in my opinion.
And he's playing with Areola, right? To go back to your point.
He's in the same system.
So that system fits, right?
Asking the same stuff.
And
just show us you can do it.
I think it's also not so much the amount of goals, like I'd be hesitant to put like a number on it. But even when I've seen him early in the year, like the type of goals he's been able to score, where he's making those number nine runs and getting on the end of things, I think those are the things that Berhalter will probably be watching to see how it fits. And it's like a pretty, I think because of the system Dallas plays and because of Areola there, that presence, like I think they'll be, it's a pretty easy picture to paint if you're there. And then, but I think some of it honestly won't just be about Jesus Ferreira and what he does. I can kind of project what he's going to do. I think he's going to be consistent. I think he's going to get goals. I think some of it's going to come down to also just what the rest of the pool does and what the rest of the field does and who is able to kind of like step in maybe in front of him or if the spot is going to be open for him to take.
We'll finish it with this. We had Sasha Kolesyan on the watch-along show, which was a pleasure. Sasha told so many awesome stories, had great insight. You can tell he's going to be a really good coach someday, just on the way he observes and the memory he has and his sort of like thoughts on relationships within teams and everything else. But I've been sort of screaming at the mountaintop for a long time that Jozy Altidore is our best. He raises our ceiling the most. And you're listening saying, you moron, he will not be healthy. And if he is, he will get hurt. You stupid person. He's not even a starter. Get the hell out of here, Weeby. You're just trying to start something. This is a narrative play. You might be right. But if Jozy Altidore is scoring goals, I missed the mixed metaphor. I don't even know what I said. It's so natural to me that I just screaming at the mountaintop. What is it actually?
Screaming from the mountaintop.
I'm down here in that freaking mountaintop. That mountaintop's looking, it's like, you know, it's like the back of a $1 bill. It's got this all-seeing eye on it. It's like, you don't know the right metaphor. And I'm like, I do. I'm screaming at you. Jozy Altidore would raise our ceiling more than anybody else. He likes to drop into that space. You can question whether the defensive side, because I do think Berhalter wants that center forward to really understand how to like pressure in the right spots and route the ball in a different way than just sort of being the point of a spear. He's got to get in form. He's got to get in the starting lineup for the Revs. Hopefully Adam Buksa gets sold. Buksa is going to the World Cup, by the way, with Poland. That's the mystery box to me. That's the boat in the mystery box. And you'll figure out what that means at a later date. All right, let's talk about expectations in Qatar and get the hell out of here. I'm going to throw another fast draw at you here. Because we're in pot two. Oh, U.S. in group A with Qatar, Poland, and Cameroon. How you feel about that one?
I like that one. I would be pretty happy about that one if I was the U.S. I would be very disappointed not to get out of the group with that one. But to be honest with you, I will be disappointed if the U.S. don't get out of the group no matter what. This team has the talent. They should get out of the group. That should be the standard.
So instead of doing a bunch of draw simulations, which I'm sure you'll see on the live watch-along show, 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Friday, Susanna Collins hosting, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr, DeMarcus Beasley, live, just watching this whole thing play out. We don't know when the draw will actually start. We believe it will start, I don't know, sometime after or around noon Eastern time. This seems to be a big secret, but we'll be there live with you to experience all of it. You say they should get out of the group. I say they should get out of the group. That should be the bare minimum expectation with the talent level that we have.
I will be screaming at the mountaintop if we do not get out of the group.
In that metaphor, the mountaintop probably can't hear us. That's the thing that's really disappointing in that metaphor. Like, you know, the altitude, there's probably wind, all sorts of weather-related issues. The mountaintop's not hearing us, but get out of the group. Like, we missed the last one. We have a talent level. We have players playing at XYZ clubs. Like, this is what you're building up for, and yet we know that international soccer sometimes doesn't care what you have in your pocket in other aspects of the game, at your club, etc. Why is that your expectation, Doyle? Why is that the bare minimum?
The talent level on the team, for one, and I'm hoping that we have better luck with injuries and health than we've had throughout qualifying. I mean, it should be said, the U.S. battled an unusual amount of absences, and the depth sure did come in handy. But I'm hoping that the bulk of the core guys are healthy and good to go. So the talent level, for one, and two, I really do like the way that the U.S. have played over the past few months. Tonight, obviously, accepted. But I think in general, since around, I think the last game of the second window, the win over Costa Rica, I think the U.S. has been more good than bad. The system that Berhalter has put in is so solid defensively, and the guys execute from within it. They're still not great at turning that into, to borrow Greg's word, verticality, and offering, you know, turning that possession into penetration and that into chances and that into goals. But I feel like I've seen progress from it. And I think then on top of that, I saw some pragmatism in this window in the first two games. And when you have talent like that, a system that I think is promising, if not yet fully functional, and it kind of an upward trend, I think it's only right to be optimistic. I'll be more optimistic if Jesus Ferreira scores 25 goals this year, or if someone else does and they play their way into the team and we can answer that number nine question. Or if, you know, Matt Turner is starting for Arsenal, like, that'd be really good too. Then I would say, yeah, absolutely, get out of the group. But like, even without that, I still think this team, whoever we're drawn with, should get out of the group.
England, Japan, and Cameroon in my most recent simulation.
England,
there.
Cameroon, and who?
Japan.
And who?
Japan. Yeah. So, go ahead, Cam. Go ahead, Kalen.
No, I was just going to say the other thing. Fun. The other reason to be... Are you just on the, like, spin the...
Yeah, I'm just spinning the wheel.
Okay, I like that. The other reason to be optimistic, I think, the part where I was more concerned about the inexperience, honestly, was the qualification process. Yep. Because the process to qualify is one of those things that, like, it's just hard to know what it's like to go play in El Salvador until you do it. And like, I actually think the less tricky part will be, you know, a lot of the, I think the World Cup is going to be, you're not going to be asked some of those same questions that the team was in the qualification process. And the other thing that I think is, bodes well is like, when you have a young team like this, 6 months or 7 months, whatever it is, actually, for even for the players that are already, you know, are the like guys you're saying are leading the line, that's a lot of time actually to make progress and development. So you look at Dest with Xavi at Barcelona, right? You would imagine 6 months more, that's going to take you to another level. Or look at Brendan Aaronson, the way he's moved in the last 6 months from the last 6 months ago. Or you look at where Gio Reyna could potentially be in 6 months from now or 7 months from now. I know he's had a bunch of injuries, but where he can kind of get back and going. So I just think you go kind of down the list of different guys, Yunus Musa, like that young age of guys that's going to be, have the weight of expectation of the qualification process and that like know-how, and even that like collective know-how of doing some hard work together. I think there's still even more behind this group. And that's why I almost think like, yes, I agree getting out of the group is totally fair expectation, realistic. But I actually think there might be a little bit more behind it for us. Obviously, all of that in a tournament depends on a lot of different circumstances, the matchups, the draw, what happens, injuries. But I like the idea for the same reason of this Canada team of like having some of that youthfulness, and maybe I think the expectations will be still high for the US, of course. But in a way, like, I think they could, at a certain point, if it's a young group in the, you know, that gets through the group stage or gets to further along in the tournament, and suddenly you're playing against, you know, a team like, I know Doyle is waiting for this England matchup desperately, but a team maybe that's caring a little bit more, it starts to play a little bit in your favor if you can get past that initial knockout stage.
World Cup's a young man game. International soccer's a young man's game. I completely agree with you about 7 months being an eternity for players in this stage of their career. A lot is going to happen. A lot's going to happen. And Qatar is not going to be, I know they got like, oh, we're going to cool the stadiums, yada, yada, yada. It's still going to be hot. We're not going to go to Costa Rica. We're not going to Panama. We're not going to Azteca. We're not going to, you know, we're not going
you
to these environments.
The clouds they're building.
I heard about that, but I don't know. I believe it when I see it. I guess I'm sure the technology.
That's a plot to Terminator, right? Like we block out the sun.
I've tried to just ignore that whole side of things. I think having a young team in what is probably going to still be a pretty darn warm World Cup, and even if it's not warm in the stadium on that day, you can't train in a bubble. You can't walk around in a bubble. You're all in the same conditions. You don't. There's no away games. There's no team that's going to go to Doha or go wherever and be like, "Well, we're completely used to this. This is extremely normal for us." Other than maybe like Qatar. I think it gives us a potential advantage, and I am very curious to see the progress that all these guys make over that course of time. We're going to the World Cup, United States. I feel like Canada's an almost we for me at this point. Like I'm we adjacent. They're going to the World Cup too. Mexico's going. So is Costa Rica.
David Goss.
But just absolutely torn down right now. He's in San Jose, just destroyed. I am absolutely certain of it. Having a wonderful time. If I know Dave, he will not let a loss in Costa Rica blunt his ability to have fun and celebrate. So I am. If he didn't bring along a pair of goggles, I'd be shocked. Any final thoughts here? We got Greg Berhalter quotes, and he's saying, look, it's a... You know, it's a big deal. And for the love of God, go to the MLS weekend, says Anders. We'll do you that favor and get out of here. Chicago, Dallas on Univision, TuneIn, and Twitter. English on Saturday. That's at 3:30 p.m. You can watch Gago Slonina, Doyle. He said, "Wow, you watch him." And that, you can probably watch Jesus Ferreira too, although he might not get the start.
Has Chicago given up a goal yet this year?
Yeah,
still one. Yeah, 19 pass buildup by Sporting Kansas. It was like a legit, gorgeous goal. But that's the only one they've given up all year.
Yeah, it's only one. Feels like a Frank O'Hara game given Jesus coming back. But he didn't play, so maybe not. Ezra's got to be an early coach of the year contender.
Oh, stop it.
Four games, Weeby. Jesus. I said early.
How far are we going to do the draft right now?
What are we doing?
Portland, LA Galaxy on Sunday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. FS1, Fox Deportes.
You got any Defender of the Year contenders in that one? Breakout Player of the Year?
Well, not Defender of the Year. That's not exactly a prime Defender of the Year draft game for you. But I do have a Breakout Player of the Year. Efra, you know, just... He's a mystery box. Maybe he could go to the World Cup.
I can't believe we didn't ask Sasha about him.
Yeah, we should have. We screwed that one up. Show, yeah. Anyway, we're out of here. That's it for us. Enjoy the weekend,
awesome,
everybody.
Sasha on the show, by the way.
It was. Awesome. He was awesome.
Can't all say, these watch-alongs can't have been say really enough. Fun.
If you have thoughts about who we should have on for watch-alongs in the future, I believe we're going to do these for every friendly, Nations League, all that stuff, all the way through the World Cup, including the World Cup games. Let us know. We will... do our darndest to go get them to join us to watch the game. And as always, join us in the comments section. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday to break down the MLS week at large. Thursday, you will get an MLS Today show. Friday is the MLS Cup or the MLS draw. No, Jesus. The World Cup draw. I feel like Bastian Schweinsteiger right now. World Cup draw on Friday, DeMarcus Beasley and the crew breaking that down. We're out of here. Adios.
Hey,
have a great weekend.
Can we just say one last thing? Last thing. We've had some sad ones where it's like over the years, right? Come on, like, we qualified for the World Cup.
Yeah, we did. We have had some real Debbie Downer ones.
There's been some dark days. So.
This is not a stray on Dave Sarakin, but I remember doing a lot of post-game USMNT shows in the Dave Sarakin era, and there were some tough times.
This is better than that.
It's quite a bit better. We're going to Qatar. Enjoy your weekend, everybody.